thank you for joining us and welcome to the State of Data and AI, our market update from BARC. I'm Sean Rogers, the CEO of BARC in the U.S., and joining me is Carsten Bang, the head of BARC Global. And Carsten, good to see you again. I always look forward to these conversations.
Absolutely, Sean. Nice to see you too. And I'm looking forward to our conversation as well.
So let's start off with a fun one. So I heard last week that based on some research that MIT did in the AI space, AI might be dead. The bubble might have popped. And the piece that really kind of came out was that companies are struggling to find a path to success with AI. What's your take on this? Were they a little over the top? It affected the stock market here in the U.S. Everything sort of dipped a little bit. So that report really made the rounds here in the U.S. What's your take on this?
Well, not only in the U.S., also here was widely discussed because, I mean, we are in that phase that a lot of companies have invested in AI, especially in Gen AI, obviously, over the last years. And I think we commented on this also in this podcast here several times that companies are really struggling to find the value, to get it scaled, get it operationalized, get it really out in the field. Plus, what the study also highlighted is it's the biggest challenge for the companies is to actually change their processes, change their ways of working, to be really transformative. And that's what they're saying, that only, I think they said 5% of companies really transformed their processes, their ways of working, while 95% didn't achieve that maybe yet. But obviously, that's a very, very high number. So I would agree in general that it's a big challenge for companies and that the problem typically is only partly or maybe not at all in the technology, but it's really around the question, can I use this technology to really transform my business? And that's a very hard thing to do. And obviously, many companies are right now not able to do that.
I think a lot of it goes back to foundational organization around data, access to data and information, and companies needing to really understand the whole holistic arena that exists around AI. In our research here at BARC, we've seen surprisingly low numbers about companies being concerned about model bias and data bias and things of that nature. And a lot of firms that we speak to are kind of going back to the foundational things like data quality and access and organization or orchestration. Getting data available and ready for AI is a much larger task than I think a lot of people thought it might be.
Yeah. And this now comes to attention. And we have now frequently discussions with AI leaders that are part of a team that's looking at data governance, that's looking at organizational things, that are thinking about how can I get my data quality right? How can I get more people involved, get the data culture in the organization, get that improved, and so on and so on. So I think it's really the time that the fundamental stuff has to be fixed lay the groundwork for AI to be really able to work. Plus, we need this transformation. Yeah? If we just think, okay, we roll out AI tools and then everything will be better, then we have to say yes. A lot of things will be better, but it's typically more on the personal productivity level, and often with very limited impact on P&L, because that was basically the key question of that study. Yeah? What's your P&L impact? And to be able to achieve that, I think there are more fundamental changes needed, and that's mostly purely in the organizational space. Yeah? Can I change my organization?
Well, you know, it's culture is always a determiner of how successful you're going to be, especially in very disruptive and innovative times. And I, you know, like I said, the news was huge. You mentioned that it was all over your side of the world as well. You know, when NVIDIA drops 3.5 points and Palantir drops almost 10 on the stock market, it certainly made a lot of news. And I think it was probably something that wasn't completely unexpected, especially for those of us that do a lot of research in the space, to see the failure rate. And part of the problem is that it's that one of my favorite sentences is that bright, shiny toy of technology, and FOMO, fear of missing out. Everybody feels this horrible pressure to be involved in AI. So they run down the road without preparing themselves. And I think we see that a lot in the use case research we're doing. I think we also see it in a lot of the initial use cases. They're pretty simple things. They're not the most P&L impactful, to your point. So I think AI is here to stay, but we have a journey in front of us.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's a second big change that we see, maybe compared to the time that Gen AI hit the news with ChatGPT, the introduction, is that by now, a lot of companies are way more cost sensitive. Many are really under big pressure. And so cost savings are really high on the agenda. And I think that's also why a lot of these spendings are being challenged. Yeah. Is this really the right thing to do now? I can contribute another result from another piece of research we do annually is our BI and analytics survey. And that's probably maybe one of the oldest segments in our market. And you could argue, hey, isn't Power BI completely dominating that? Is that really something interesting? And the answer is yes, there's actually a lot happening. And what I just mentioned is we can see that in our data, in this year's data. So the topic of cost of tools is now very high up on the list of the key purchase criteria. So the question, what are the requirements of buyers of the BI and analytics technology on software? And the whole topic around cost or price performance is very high up now. It's not so much about functionality anymore because most people are aware that this is a very mature market. Yeah, so most tools actually can do most of the jobs you would ask them to do, but now it's really all around ease of use, flexibility, and cost is now for almost half of the purchases of the buyers of software here is a criteria. And we have all seen that Microsoft increased the cost. Also, the bundling with Fabric is not something everyone is super happy about. Yeah? And so we see that it's still an interesting market where things are moving, where decisions are being made to also invest in new software. And next to cost, we also saw some interesting developments. For example, the deployment options were also really rising in importance in terms of buying criteria. And we see here it's typically a lot around flexibility. So maybe not being forced into the cloud, yeah, being able to have a hybrid deployment with cloud and on-prem solutions, that is definitely rising in importance. For sure, also around the data sovereignty discussions. We also had it in this session here. But we can also see that in the data now.
It's becoming a really hot topic. And going back to the AI side, through BARC research, we've identified that AI leaders, companies that are really advanced in what they are doing with AI, they have a different challenge. And goes back to what you just said. It's about money. It's about cost. AI mm-hmm. is not cheap. And mm-hmm. we saw this happen a little bit during the big data disruption. Everybody thought initially that this was a path to simplicity, flexibility, and less cost. And it wasn't in the end. It was just a good part of an overall strategy for a company to consider. And I think some of those things about AI are heading home. So I'm not too terribly surprised by it.
Yeah, I said that before, but I want to say it again. I think this whole discussion now around agentic AI is actually not adding to the hype or just adding another dimension. But for me, it's really fundamental because for me, agentic AI really narrows down the discussion on concrete use cases, concrete benefits in very clearly defined processes. And I think this is exactly what a lot of companies need right now. Now, they did this infrastructure investments, maybe rolled out a Gen AI tool to many employees, and that's done now. And here it's where we see these mixed survey results that probably didn't really or isn't really showing in P&L results right now. But if I think about agentic AI being something that's very concrete, very directly targeted at concrete automations, cost savings, efficiency gains, I think that makes a lot of sense. And that's why I wouldn't say AI is dead, but I would say it should be now very benefits oriented, and agentic AI, I think, could be a very good way to do that.
Yeah. Well, users are, we tend to split our conversation on this conversation between users and vendors and investors and M&A. And so I'm going to move us to the vendor part. Boy, they're busy. Taking advantage of what's happening. I like that you just mentioned agentic AI. It's been a topic that is part of just about every conversation that we have with vendors. And one of the themes that's kind of coming away from it is that a lot of vendors are trying to make themselves the center of the stack, the agent hub, the agent marketplace, the place where you build agents. They want to play that sort of central role for this innovation. They can't all win, and they can't all be the central location. What do you think about this movement towards that kind of value proposition from vendors?
Yeah, I mean, it's first of all, it's a natural behavior. Yeah, that they basically want to lock customers in often, yeah, or basically have a lot of value generation on their platforms. But what I think many people are seeing is that this will not happen. Yeah, there will be so many different processes and applications and tasks that we want to automate or integrate, that the whole question around interoperability and how does this work together is definitely gaining in importance. And we see a super fast pickup of the MCP protocol that is helping to connect it. Let's say in our world, I think the most important thing is that it makes it much easier to connect a Gen AI application, front end, whatever, to also to data, that I get access to data. And so that changes again the way how we build these systems. And it's now easier to access data more directly or to combine different agents. And I think this is exactly what we need. And what I'm quite pleased to see, and what I see very positively, is the speed of adoption. So I couldn't think of a vendor that would say, oh, no, that's not interesting to us, or no, that's a protocol of our competitors, so we will not support it. But there are now so many vendors supporting it that I think it's a very good thing that the whole agent world, let's call it that way, yeah, at least has found a protocol that everyone can agree on that makes it easier to access data.
It's interesting that the vendors are creating these battlegrounds. So I mentioned the Agentic Hub or Library or Agent Studio type scenario, but also next to that is this rush to kind of own metadata, the semantic layer to connect catalogs, all in sort of the end game around giving better governance, unified views of data, kind of making information ready for AI. So it's another vendor fight for real estate. Do you think it's a positive one? And how is that going to play out in the long run? I again, it's like the agentic thing. It's like, who will win?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, metadata is an obviously super important topics, definitely gained an importance on the user side. Because we see that that especially agentic AI or agents seem to work better if they get more context. Yeah, if you can train them or give them access to more context, so that's of high priority. to expose metadata. Not every vendor is super proactive about it. It's called that way, maybe rather protective. But that's where a lot of specialist vendors jump in and say, hey, yeah, but I try to make this easier. And I think that's also a reason why the catalogs and catalog vendors became so popular over the years, because it gives you exposure to the data and metadata at hand. But what we will see, that's my projection, is what some people call the data wars. Yeah, so companies, software vendors trying to protect the data that they have. And I mean, we saw all sorts of things, yeah, like this, if you want to exit, for example, a cloud hyperscaler, that you have to pay a fee to get your data out of those systems. We see these ideas around zero copy, like the SAP and Databricks partnership, yeah, where basically SAP says, well, okay, there's value in the data in our systems. We want to monetize that. We will offer these data products. And if you want to use that data, access that data, then a possibility would be to use Databricks, but it's a zero copy. Yeah, so the data remains at SAP. You can use it. Yeah, maybe train a model with it in Databricks, but still it's not a full-fledged data extraction. So these are all some I think notable things that are happening. But you're right, yeah, so vendors are maybe even increasingly protective around the data they have in their systems, because as we all know, data is of real value. That's something that's the true asset. While a lot of other things, maybe including the applications that software vendors are selling today, might be replaced by new agents or even agents they build themselves in the future. So there's a lot happening. But the data, I think, is the true asset.
I love that you brought up the SAP Databricks part, because I think that's one of the greatest examples of two companies seeing the value in connecting data from two systems, and getting Databricks being able to tap into the SAP universe is a very important move for them, and vice versa. So I think we're going to see more strategic partnerships like that in the future, but it's also going to be some companies will be a little more conservative about it, because they want to protect what they have and enforce their users to centralize on their platform versus others. But the Databricks SAP example, I thought, was a real strong one. So, the battlegrounds are growing. Agentic battlegrounds for control and monitoring and deployment. And then, of course, the whole idea around data, for sure. I know that we do quite a lot of research there, and you've seen some trends, especially in our business intelligence and analytic platform score report that kind of talks a little bit about where we see Gen AI growing right now. And I like that we have that insight into the world. So it'll be interesting to watch over the next 6 months for sure.
Yeah.
Before I leave the vendor world, quantum is popping up a little bit. Now, and this is very traditional, right? The vendors are looking forward, and they should be. Quantum is definitely a future tech. It's not a consumable tech today. I think it could be very exciting in the next 12 or 18 months. What kind of time horizon do you think? Is 18 months too fast for quantum to really become a topic of real consideration?
I think so. Yeah, I think it's a bit further out. I mean, the rate of progress is there. It's impressive. It's really moving quickly, but we are still at a pretty low level. Yeah, still a lot of fundamental research needs to be done. The systems are really more experimental in that are in place, but it's definitely worth watching. That's my point, because, I mean, there are very, very big implications, especially on cryptography. Yeah? I mean, that will have a major impact on companies, but in the data and AI world, another big thing is obviously what types of models you can run. Yeah, and there are still problems that where we simply don't have enough compute to really solve them. And I think that's where quantum can really add value. But I think it will take a bit more time. We'll see. No one really knows, obviously. But if I look at the state we are in, for me, it's rather maybe 3 to 5 years where we see.
Okay. So okay.
We'll see. Let's come back to that in 18 months.
We will. I'll make sure it ends up on one of our timelines for sure. Well, let's switch to our final category. We always kind of touch on this, and I'm going to let you lead a little bit because you spend more time here than I do. But what investors are doing from an acquisition and a funding standpoint is always very interesting. And boy, a lot's happened in the last 90 days. What rose to the top on your radar that was interesting?
Yeah, so maybe it's noteworthy to mention the overall dynamics. So while the M&A market was more or less unaffected by the also political events over the last, let's say, 6 to 12 months, investment market definitely was. So especially after Q1, investors really stopped and said, well, okay, now we have to first understand the impact, especially of the tariff announcements. I mean, that has an impact all over the world on economies and on decision-making, also in the investment world. And what we see now is that, let's say, half a year later, things seem to normalize again. Yeah, so we see a big pickup also in investments in our space, which is good. That investors are very interested in AI, but also very wary about AI is already in the market for quite a while. So when I talk to investors, and as you know, we are helping them in assessing targets, yeah, and assessing opportunities in due diligence. So the big question, how will AI impact the business model of this specific software vendors? Yeah, this is a super important question now for quite some time. So this is definitely on the radar. But what we see is that now what's really coming back is also a lot of investments into data technologies. Yeah, so it's not all AI anymore. There seemed to be a time that's a super big focus. But now I think we saw also a lot of interesting investments. Maybe to just mention a few on the investment side, it's obviously Databricks is the big one. Everyone's waiting for the IPO. They got this huge investment end of last year of $10 billion. That was at that time, I think, the largest investment round ever in the market. And it was then obviously overtaken by OpenAI, but that's, I mean, a different segment. But they now did another round, which I think is a bit surprising because I would guess that the $10 billion aren't just spent yet. It would be quite quick. So, what the big news was, also what they published, is that they are now at a valuation of $100 billion. Yeah. So I think this whole round was not about getting some money in to fund operations, but it was really to set another mark in valuation. And for me, that's all on the path to an IPO. But obviously, that made the news. Another one that really caught our attention is ClickHouse. Yeah, that's a vendor that not many people are aware of. But they have grown super quickly over the last years. And I mean, they do, let's say, a data platform. That's what they offer. But they can handle real-time data well. They have some observability pieces in there. It's an open source component involved. So they obviously seem to do things right. And they have a target to grow 200% this year, which is really something. And I think it's now even more, it's 400. Yeah, they want to quadruple their revenue and should have surpassed 100 million revenue now. So it's really a sizable vendor, and they could get a $350 million investment recently. And that's also showing that some investors have big faith, yeah, in their technology and the vendor. Maybe a few small ones we found interesting, and they are in, just maybe pick out one that might highlight the different areas where investments are being done. One is surely the open table formats. We discussed about it, the OTFs like Apache Iceberg or Delta. And now there's a lot of tooling developing around that, how to manage it. And there was one here out of Spain, QBeast, that got $7.6 million funding, and they basically built an index for open tables. Yeah. So another example is on that one. We saw that still around AI pipelines, there was a vendor called Chalk that got $50 million, and they are building inference pipelines, so basically addressing a certain problem or topic in AI training and then the inference phase. Maybe another one to mention is Julius. They got a $10 million round. And I think that's a good example. If you look at it, you might argue that you don't see a lot of new things. So it's really, it's chat with your data. So, okay, but I would say a lot of other vendors also implemented that. Yeah, and they build AI-powered data analysis and AI-powered notebooks. So also something that a lot of vendors invested in over the last 3 years, but still, there are lots of new vendors coming up. Yeah, so there's still new ideas around that. Yeah, how to be better able to support data integration, data engineering, and data analysis with AI. So it's interesting to watch that there are still investments also in that area.
It's fun stuff. I want to, before we wrap up, I found it very interesting. The Perplexity made an unsolicited offer to Google to buy Chrome. And we're both kind of laughing a little bit, but we talked about this offline and you made a really good point about how the browser is going to play and is playing a key role in agentic AI and other AI type apps where browser technology is part of those workflows. So I haven't read any additional news. There is no deal pending, but it was very interesting that Perplexity sort of raised that flag in the market and took a run at it. Obviously, it's hard to understand if it was super serious, but serious enough to make the news.
Well, it got them a lot of attention, PR.
Yeah.
I mean, and that was successful in that way. Otherwise, I don't think it was too serious. I don't think so. Yeah, but talking about acquisitions, I mean, there was a big one, Salesforce, to acquire Way. I think we both don't really know how to pronounce that.
I think W-A-I-I, yeah. Or is it perhaps Y? I don't know, but it's natural language to SQL, which is, again, Salesforce just sort of building up its capabilities around data, which makes a lot of sense. And Cloud Software made an acquisition of Arcerta, and that was around data management and data governance. Also makes good sense. So those things continue for sure. Any others that you've seen in the market?
Yeah, as I said, there's still a lot going on. Maybe one more to mention is Colibra, being one of the biggest vendors in the cataloging space. They acquired DZ Labs, and that gives them more capabilities around unstructured data. And I think that's also a trend widen the data platforms, be it catalogs or data integration or any type of data management, to integrate also capabilities to handle unstructured data or process or transform unstructured data, as we all see the growing importance in especially Gen AI use cases, also agentic AI cases. So vendors are also, by M&A means, are basically adding capabilities for unstructured data.
Good insights. I enjoy this conversation, and we'll be back again in 90 days to update our view on end users and vendors and the investment side alike. Karsten, thanks for coming on the call today.
Thanks, Sean. Bye-bye.